Getting out from under the tarp.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the economy as trading gets underway for the day and for the week. About 20 minutes in now, so we're going to ask, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P about 0.4%. The NASDAQ up about 0.5%. The Dow higher now by 26 points, 10,497. European shares in the green as well. Oh, 1% or so on average. Investors breathing a little easier in Europe and Asia today that there's some resolution in Dubai's debt problem. Its neighbor Abu Dhabi has agreed to finance $10 billion to cover its huge debts. Well, it is official. Citigroup is finally leaving the realm of the Troubled Asset Relief Program after a good amount of relief, and it hopes no more trouble. We're going to get the latest live from our own Jeremy Hobson, who's going to join us in a moment. First, a big energy deal that's been announced today. ExxonMobil says it's buying XTO Energy in a $31 billion stock deal. XTO is a big player in natural gas and some oil properties, too. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. He's with us live from New York. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So what does ExxonMobil hope to gain with XTO?
Well, I think they're hoping to branch out a little more into the natural gas, the shale gas areas where they do have some exposure, but certainly not a lot. I think they're looking forward by realizing that there'll probably be tougher emission standards, that natural gas, as a result, is more environmentally benign.
All right, so we're going to watch that for just a moment. And as I mentioned a moment ago, Citigroup says it's going to repay bailout money it received from the federal government. The timing comes the same day of a White House gathering with President Obama and executives at the nation's largest banks. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has been keeping an eye on this story for us from our New York bureau, and he joins us live. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning, Steve.
So Citi had originally borrowed $45 billion from taxpayers. Are we going to get all that back?
Well, Citi's going to pay back $20 billion. The other $25 billion of the loan, you may remember, was converted into stock earlier this year. So the government will simply sell that stock over the next year or so and relinquish its stake in the bank. Also, Washington had guaranteed hundreds of billions of dollars in Citi debt, and that guarantee will end as a result of this deal.
Now, Jeremy, is Citi really ready to do this, or does it just want to get out from under the government's control?
Well, it's a good question. The government clearly feels that Citi is ready, or it wouldn't have allowed the bank to repay the loan. But some banking analysts say it is premature and that Citi is just doing this so it can pay its executive what it wants and give investors confidence that it can stand on its own two feet.
And we talked about this big meeting at the White House today with President Obama, the heads of the big Wall Street banks in Washington. What's the significance there?
Well, this is all related because as these big banks pay back their TARP money, the White House loses a little bit of the control that it has over them. And I think the president really wants to take advantage of this moment while the banks still remember what they were given from taxpayers and tell them, look, we need your help, too. You've got to lend more to small businesses and consumers. He also wants them to get on board with his financial regulatory reform proposals. So those will be discussed today. But he did last night, Steve, call them fat cats on 60 Minutes. So it may be a tense meeting this morning.
Indeed. He did. All right. Jeremy Hobson joining us from New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you.
And Sam Stovall, the issue of bankers' compensation has received a lot of negative press. I mean, do you think it's likely to get much attention at the White House meeting?
Oh, I think it certainly will. And when you call it a gathering, I was thinking it's going to be more like a lecture. Finger wagging going on, basically looking to encourage increased lending activities, try to be a little bit more proactive on the real estate modification program, but also on compensation. I think certainly that is the issue that Citigroup wants, is to not lose a lot of its talent, even though we do sort of question their balance sheet as being among the riskiest of their peers.
I mean, yeah, what is your perspective on Citigroup? I mean, you say risky, huh?
Well, we have a hold recommendation on the stock. We still think that the company probably should have waited a quarter or two before deciding to pay back the TARP. Right now, it does have the best ratios that financial analysts use to compare peer banks, but it still is a relatively risky situation, and so I think that we would have preferred that they wait a quarter or two before paying back TARP.
All right. Sam Stovall from S&P, we do thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
Week number two of the UN summit in Copenhagen, world leaders continue to grapple with the issue of climate change. Marketplace reporters Stephen Beard and Sam Eaton are both there. This morning, word that negotiators remain far apart on all of the major issues, and there's been the first walkout of a delegation. Stephen Beard is with us right now from the summit. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So, a walkout. What happened?
A large group of African delegates walked out. They're protesting that at the end of this week in Copenhagen, we might wind up without a binding agreement to cut carbon emissions. So as we speak, there are no formal negotiations going on here. Plenty of talks behind closed doors, but still plenty of disagreements and differences between the two key players, for example, the US and China. The US wants tougher, verifiable emission curbs from the Chinese. The Chinese want much deeper cuts from the US, and neither side seems willing to give. As Alessandro Vitelli of Idea Carbon told me, there hasn't so far been a lot of progress at these talks.
There are some very, very divergent positions. There are some very strong opinions being held by different groups. And it's going to take some very, very heavy lifting by world leaders to get us to an agreement.
Stephen, with the arrival of more than 100 world leaders there, isn't there some optimism that an agreement will be reached? Otherwise, I mean, why did they agree to go?
Yes, indeed. I mean, the political pressure for a deal is overwhelming. But the question is, will it be a serious, tough agreement to cut emissions? Will it be an agreement with teeth?
All right. Stephen Beard in Copenhagen today. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
All right. Check out Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl later today. We're going to have more coverage on the UN summit on climate change in Copenhagen. Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, December 14th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Boeing's much-anticipated 787 Dreamliner plane is more than 2 years behind schedule. Call it flightus interruptus, but the jet is set to fly for the first time ever from Seattle as early as tomorrow, weather permitting. Mitchell Hartman reports.
The 250-passenger jet has sophisticated electronics and lightweight composite plastics that'll make it 20% more fuel efficient than similar aircraft flying today. The 787 will go farther and have better air quality in the passenger cabin as well. But the plane's development has been plagued by technical problems and delays, Boeing spokesman Jim Prue.
We're very excited to get the airplane in the air and begin our rigorous flight test program so that we can validate this game-changing airplane and get it in the hands of our customers.
Prue says Boeing expects to deliver the first Dreamliners a year from now. Aerospace analyst Scott Hamilton isn't so sure.
There have been so many things that have gone wrong. I know Boeing is going to try to move heaven and earth, but a flight test program is designed to uncover problems.
Hamilton says those problems could mean more delays. Boeing already has 840 Dreamliner orders, but the delays have given European rival Airbus a chance to catch up with its new jet, which debuts in 2013. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Congress continues to debate health care reform, and there's a proposal on the table to help pay for it, a tax on expensive health insurance plans. They're called Cadillac plans because of how much they cost and not necessarily what that cost buys. Sponsors say it could bring the price of insurance down, but not all Cadillacs are equipped alike. Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan is with us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So if we're talking about taxing on premiums and not necessarily what you get from those premiums, I mean, who's that serving?
Well, it's serving a political point because the senators who proposed it can say that they're taxing only the rich and miraculously pay for the health care plan. That's the stated reason, and it also drives down costs. In reality, I think it's a question of just pretending that only the rich will be affected, and they haven't really thought it through.
Do you think this is going to give enough of a disincentive to stop people from buying into these really expensive plans?
No, because you're not going to have a choice. A calculation I did shows that if the 100 United States senators were, in fact, their own plan, because their average age is something like 63 or 64, they pay a tax like the end of the world. But because they're part of the federal workforce, they're not subject to the tax because the workforce is much younger than the senators. There are all of these unanticipated consequences where the people you would think would get whacked won't get whacked. And maybe some eight-person company that's had a problem because some individual had an expensive disease and next year the premiums go up. A lot of people who don't have anything you would consider lush could end up being hurt by this thing because of the way it's drawn.
If the end game, Alan, is to bring costs and drive premiums down, how do we get there?
Well, if I knew that, you could be sure I'd be a consultant and so rich, I wouldn't tell you. But I think you have to look at the system a whole different way that it's being looked at. You have to say, gee, what's wrong? And part of the problem is that doctors are scared to death of malpractice and order a whole lot of tests you probably don't need. You need really a system where someone is in charge of someone's health and can make intelligent decisions. And the idea being to get people better, not to game the system. Now I suspect that will happen sometime after there is peace on earth and goodwill to man.
Well, we can only keep our fingers crossed, right?
Right.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us today. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
This week, the House hopes to pass the massive $680 billion Pentagon spending bill. President Obama has promised to not hide the costs of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So how's he doing? We asked reporter Brett Neely to find out.
This Pentagon bill includes $130 billion for the two wars. American University professor Gordon Adams gives the accounting for those conflicts the thumbs up.
The war costs really are the war costs and not other stuff that you couldn't get, a kind of free lunch.
Under the Bush administration, the war budget was never properly estimated. Instead, the Pentagon would regularly request emergency supplemental help and lard that with money for unrelated projects. But the Afghan surge has thrown the administration's efforts to fix the process off track. Todd Harrison is with the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments.
The reality is they're now going to have to come back and ask for a supplemental one more time.
The administration estimates the surge might cost an extra $30 billion. Gordon Adams thinks that may be low.
My guess is it's going to cost more than 30. It may even cost more than 40.
The danger with a supplemental request, he says, is that history could repeat itself. The bill could get stuffed with goodies that don't belong there. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
And finally, there are a lot of people who are superstitious, right? But would you believe Stephen King, the author best known for fictional horror, donated money so soldiers from the Maine National Guard can be home for the holidays? Right now they're stationed in Indiana awaiting deployment to Afghanistan next month. Now King and his wife pitched in $12,999, just shy of $13,000, a figure King called unlucky. His personal assistant, by the way, chipped in that other buck. Hey, check us out online at our website, marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.